SBS live streams and podcasts are supported by advertising.
Hi, it's Noor Haider, one of the hosts of The Guardian's daily news podcast, Full Story. Every weekday, we bring you a single story, going beyond the headlines and taking you closer to The Guardian's journalism. Combining personal storytelling with analysis, we take you inside the stories that matter most. For fearless, independent reporting that holds power to account, listen to Full Story from The Guardian, wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to SBS News.
Imagine a very popular and hugely consequential international football match being played in a stadium built for 100,000 screaming fans. Except, there's no one in those seats. Hard to imagine, right? Well, it has happened before, and there's questions being raised whether or not it could happen at this year's FIFA World Cup. It's an autumn night in September 2021, at Mexico's Azteca Stadium, which routinely seats 87,000 fans. But for this match between Mexico's national team and Jamaica, it's empty. It wasn't some COVID precaution, but a precaution against Mexico's fans. After continuous warnings from FIFA against abusive behaviour, match officials noted continuous homophobic chants directed towards opposing keepers at matches across the country. So FIFA stepped in, telling Mexico it can host matches but without spectators. That's what happened when Mexico and Jamaica walked out on the pitch to empty stands. It marked a shift in FIFA's latest push to stamp out abusive behaviour at football matches, which was amplified at the 2024 FIFA Congress in Bangkok, when the organisation made its pledge to rid football of racism. Here's FIFA President Gianni Infantino's address to the Congress.
We cannot accept anymore what is happening in the stadiums, what is happening on the pitch, and those who still believe in the world, anywhere in the world, that they can still behave in a racist way when they are dealing with football, when they are attending a football game, when they are playing a game. Those who believe that, they must know that we don't want them. We don't want them. They have to go out. They have to be out. They don't have to be part of our community. They don't have to be part of football.
Despite condemnation from Infantino and FIFA, stories of racism and discrimination continue. According to Kick It Out, an organization that reports on discrimination in the game, the number of direct reports shows an increase in overall incidences of discrimination and abuse since 2019, with last year's findings noting 245 reports were made about racism in professional football. That's up 10%, with reports of racist mass chanting up sixfold. So what exactly has FIFA done? Well, they introduced an anti-racism panel made up of former players. They've committed to educational initiatives around the world, and they've brought in new, tougher rules, specifically the no racism gesture. Taking notes from the European Confederation's 2009 policy, FIFA has formalized the idea and the three-step procedure. Here's how it works. If a player or official is the target or witnesses racial abuse, they can alert match officials by creating an X with their arms. This will start the first step of the procedure. Step 1 sees the match stopped. The referee will try to address the issue. However, without hearing the remark directly, there's little that can be done. But details are given to match officials to assess. If the abuse comes from supporters, a warning for all spectators will be made to cut out the abuse, potentially removing those involved. The referee then restarts play. If the abuse continues, step 2 begins, which sees the match suspended for 15 minutes. Teams are sent to the changing rooms while the matter is addressed. If the abuse continues after the match is resumed, step 3 gives the referee and officials the power to abandon the match altogether. Additionally, fines, suspensions, and other sanctions may follow incidences of racial abuse, as well as criminal charges. Infantino said implementing this is a key first step in empowering players throughout the world, but the plan has its critics. Francis Aratifi is the chair of the Australian Players Union, the PFA, and he says he's
not a fan of it, not been a fan of it for a long time, because there aren't any other workplaces where a person can be subjected to racial abuse in their workplace and their employers or the people that have a duty of care for that person say to that person, well, we're going to give the punters, another couple of chances, and if they don't stop their racial vilification of our employee, then we might take action. I mean, it's just a ridiculous state of affairs. I mean, that would never happen in any other space, in any other organisation or workplace. So that's why that policy is never sat well with me at all. And in my view, it's got to a point now where, with these incidents still happening, the next step now, players just have to walk off. I think that we can't keep prioritising, oh, we've got to complete the game. No, I think that people, the human dignity is as much more important than a game of football.
Beyond that, Aretifi is sceptical that FIFA will follow through and abandon matches. So what will happen if we see the three-step procedure enacted during the World Cup? Could we see matches fully abandoned? I had a look at FIFA's updated disciplinary code, and here's how it could work. Teams where responsible for the abuse may be forced to forfeit the match. Matches may be replayed, restarting the match from the time that they were abandoned. And FIFA can impose sanctions such as limiting the number of spectators or replaying without any spectators at all, like in Mexico City. But for sociologist Ramon Spy, he's not too sure that's going to happen.
How do we ensure that those who experience racism, for example players, actually don't feel kind of not taken seriously or not actually supported in the process, which has often happened where actually those who have actually stood up and, for example, have tried to use the gesture, the no racism gesture, or the three-step procedure, for example, a referee, they're bumping up against systems that have huge commercial imperatives, such as the game must go on, right? Because it's live televised. There's a lot of talk about zero tolerance policy, which exists on paper, but in practice, unfortunately, we see many cases where actually that isn't really enforced the way it should be. And therefore, kind of what message does that send, right? So it sends a message that even though we say that racism is kind of unacceptable, we often downplay it or kind of like to conceal it and recede it from view because it's very uncomfortable for the sport.
Earlier this year, a high-profile incident saw the no racism gesture used, and it led to FIFA making some changes. Real Madrid's Vinicius Jr. signalled to the referee after a confrontation with Benfica's Gianluca Prestiani, in which Prestiani used his shirt to cover his mouth while speaking to Vinny Jr. The match was stopped and the referee reviewed the incident. But having not heard what happened, the match resumed 15 minutes later with both players continuing. Prestiani denied making racist comments. Vinny Jr. posted a statement reading, "Racists are above all cowards. They need to put their shirts over their mouth to show how weak they are." And he described the process as a poorly executed protocol that served no purpose. The whole incident set off alarm bells for FIFA. Infantino said he was shocked and saddened by the incident, and FIFA responded by jumping to address the issue, not the poorly executed protocols, which Infantino praised the referee for utilising, but rather the mouth covering. Speaking about the potential rule change, Infantino told Sky UK,
"If a player covers his mouth and says something, and this has a consequence, a racist consequence, then he has to be sent off, obviously. If you don't have something to hide, you don't hide your mouth when you say something. That's it. As simple as that."
And last month, FIFA formalised the new rule. If players cover their mouth during a confrontation, the referee can send them off with a red card. I asked Spy about the policy, and he said,
"It's a tricky one, isn't it? We know it's obviously sort of based on a recent incident, so I can see that, and in that case, I think that would have been very useful if they had been able to really have greater sanctions sort of in that particular case. Again, it's a tricky one. I understand, for example, I know that players often cover their mouths for very legitimate reasons. I mean, they live in a hyper mediatized, like everything will be picked up in any word that they utter. And so I get that. Yet, it's a tricky one, but I actually generally am in favour of that particular measure. And let's see how it plays out. I might be proven wrong, so I'm really, really curious there how that will actually play out. And again, how will that be enforced in practice?
But for Aretifi, the new rule only addresses part of the issue.
Well, FIFA have got to take it seriously. They've got to stop doing these piecemeal, patchwork type of policies. The problem is that the whole construct around anti-racism, the way that FIFA's dealt with it, as I said, it's around PR. It's around trying to look good rather than, hey, let's really try and address this problem in a substantive way, in a really serious and in-depth way. I think that you need to look at it overall as in a big piece, that racism isn't just around people saying bad words about someone else. That I think a lot of people, their understanding of racism tends to be, oh, it's calling somebody a bad name, or that the person doing the vilification, that person, the perpetrator, is someone who's ignorant, and, you know, they have some sort of personal moral failing, you know, and that makes them think like that. Whereas I think that it's a bit more to it than that. There's also a societal component to this around the fact that we live in a racialized society. Racism is not, racism is systemic, it's structural, it's historical, and it's cultural. And so all of those things. And so racism is the way that it's through the way that we enforce race, the construct of race, through things like policies, laws, practices, you know, the way we think about those things. And so we need to have a bigger conversation around that, rather than just, oh, that guy said a really bad name towards someone on the field, so we've got to have criminal sanctions, or we've got to fine them a lot of money, and we've got to ban them for a long time. It's a bigger conversation than that.
Along with the changes to mouth covering last month, FIFA also announced a new policy for when players walk off the pitch in protest to a ref decision. It comes after Senegal left the pitch during the Africa Cup of Nations against Morocco. The team felt the penalty decisions by the referees were not being made fairly, and after arguing with the officials, left the pitch for 14 minutes, before returning to the field and winning the match in extra time. That was in January, and since then the African Confederation stripped Senegal of their win, and awarded the cup to Morocco, ruling that by leaving the pitch, Senegal forfeited the match. And so FIFA's move is to formalise the rule across all competitions, to say leaving the pitch in disagreement with the referee or officials will lead to a forfeit. However, there may be some unexpected consequences.
Those competing or conflicting kind of messages exist, unfortunately, and they sit quite uneasily, in my view, with each other. So more consistency of messaging there is important, that, hey, in some cases, actually, this is completely justified, and we will really back the players who do so.
FIFA is prioritizing the completion of a football match in the face of people's human dignity being violated and trashed. And that's just not acceptable, you know, because a football match is not more important than someone's human dignity. And so if you're going to try to constrain people or decent people from taking the right action in the face of their human rights and their human dignity being trampled, then I think that says a lot about FIFA as an institution.
Now, following the rule changes, FIFA has also announced a series of messages that will be seen in stadiums across the tournament. Football Unites, No Racism, Unite for Peace and Education, and Be Active. It comes after criticism last year over a lack of messaging around no racism and no discrimination at FIFA's Club World Cup, which was also held in the United States. Despite being seen at the Women's 2023 World Cup in Australia and New Zealand, and being featured prominently at Qatar 2022, it's been welcomed by those who were sceptical that the move was intentional and political. For Ramon Spy, the change is exactly what FIFA needs.
There's been real strong criticism of FIFA for the fact that they withdrew some of the anti-racist messaging at the Club World Cup in the United States. Sort of trying to navigate the tricky political terrain. But in doing so, again, it sends the message that, hey, this is not sort of an unconditional kind of demand that we have, i.e. Zero tolerance. It actually is conditional upon where it's played, who the hosts are, which stakeholders, because we don't really want to offend anyone. We don't want to get in tricky situations, and particularly we don't want to damage any commercial kind of interest, right? And so that straight away creates a very complex situation. So I think that courageous leadership of, hey, this is actually what we stand for. It's not just commitment, but it's actually shown in action, right? So it's actions speak louder than words, and doing that consistently. I think that's a big part of all of this that sort of brings it all together.
And with the World Cup now less than a month away, and the Azteca home to the opening match, fans will be hopeful to see the stadium full again. And for FIFA, this year's World Cup is a huge test for its commitment to end racism, and a signal for how seriously they'll take it into the future.
Thank you.
Noor Haider here, one of the hosts of The Guardian's daily news podcast, Full Story. Every weekday, we go beyond the headlines, taking you closer to The Guardian's journalism. Listen to Full Story wherever you get your podcasts.